Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. I love talking to authors because they understand the power of writing. It gives you clarity, but also gives you a way to teach. Now, we have an author that usually writes fiction books, but we have a new book that just came out yesterday called Sacred Days, Sacred Songs. You guys know I'm a Christian. I'm a true believer, and I wouldn't be here without my faith. So it's an honor to have you here, sir. Michael D. Young. I made the confusion. I made the mishap of just Michael Young. Michael D. Young. It's an honor to have you here, sir.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do use that middle initial because there are quite a few of us Michael Youngs walking around.
What year were you born? Because I'm an 84, and the number one name was Michael, just so you know.
84. So.
Yeah. Are you 84?
Totally, man.
All right. Great work, man. When were you born? August 10th.
It was definitely very popular. Like every, I think, elementary school class, there were at least two or three.
So same. Same here,
it's always, man. Michael Y, you know.
Well, my mom named my brother Matt in 1980. And I went back and I saw the most popular name in 1980 was Matt. The most popular name in 1984 was Michael. So my mom was just like, all right, what does everybody name in their kids? Let's just go with that. So Matt and Michael.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so thanks for being here, man. All right, when's your birthday? What month?
March 15th. Just coming up in about a week.
Oh, man. Going to be the big 4-0.
Yeah, man. It's weird. I'm like, that looks like how old I'm the oldest of a bunch of kids. And that's about how old my parents were when I was in high school. So That's weird.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I had all my, I got like motorcycles and I picked up a car by the time I'm turning 40, obviously on August 10th. And
nice.
And so I got a car. That was my way of saying like, well, I'm not at the halfway point. The midlife crisis didn't hit. So I'm going to buy my car beforehand. So it's out of the way.
That's right. So you can't accuse me of that being midlife crisis.
Yeah, I'm not one of them. Anyways, Sacred Day, Sacred Songs. Let's start off with this book. It just came out. What is this about and why did you write it?
Yeah, you know, I actually, I'd started kind of down this path with a Christmas one a couple of years ago called An Advent Carol's Countdown, where I did 24 different Christmas carols. And for each day, I broke down the history of it, some of the interesting things about it. And the cool thing was then I put a little like QR code at the bottom. So you can just like put your phone over it and listen to it. So like, it was kind of meant to be something you do with your family as you're getting ready and anticipating Christmas. And so after that, my publisher put that one out a couple years ago and it was really large success. People loved it. And they approached me with this idea like, hey, we want you to do an Easter one. But so Easter, I don't know, it's not quite the same thing. You don't really count down the whole month, you know, for Easter, especially since it's kind of a moving target. like this month, you know, this year it's, you know, in March, next year it's probably in April. So they focused it instead on Holy Week because that's always a thing, you know, Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday. And so what I kind of took that same concept I did with the Christmas one, but this one has focuses on two different songs around a topic for each day of Holy Week from Palm Sunday all the way up to Easter Sunday. And it's kind of like, it meant as a devotional that you could do with your family or just by yourself, like every day leading up to Easter during Holy Week. And then I sing with them. They're now called the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square. Used to be called the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. But a lot of the songs that I've gotten that are in the book are ones I was introduced to in my choir service. So I'm a big musical guy. I've sung in choirs all my life, you know, all the way from little kid through school, up through college. And now I'm trotting around the globe with the Tabernacle Choir. I just got back from the Philippines, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it was awesome. But anyway, like a lot of this Easter music, we sing from a lot of different music from a lot of different traditions. And so I've been introduced to some of these just incredible Easter songs over the years. And I included those in my book.
Yeah, so it's each chapter focuses on the rich history of two songs that relate to events of the Holy Week.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so the Last Supper, the crucifixion, and the resurrection.
Precisely.
The
yeah.
Complete lyrics for each song. I'm just reading the summary. The complete lyrics for each song are provided along with the fascinating facts and stories behind each one. Are you talking about the creation of the song itself or basically mm-hmm. the meaning of the song and the details around that moment?
A little of both.
Nice. Okay.
Tie it in. Just to like give you an example of what that could look like. There's one that's called "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go." Looking at this is one I had sung in choir. It was, wow, that's a great, powerful like Easter song. And we looked into it. And I found out it was written by this guy who was, he was a young man, loving life. He had just got engaged. You know, his career was about to start, but then he became blind. And once he became blind, his fiance left him. They were about to get married. He said, "Nah, never mind," and left him. And instead actually turned the direction of his life and became a priest and became, devoted himself to preaching for the rest of his life. But kind of realizing the background behind that song and the kind of heart-wrenching story that was the birth of that song made it even more impactful than the first time I'd sung it when not knowing that.
Do you have the book with you right now?
Oh, I do have a copy over on my desk.
Can you read some of the lyrics from that? Because I'm sure. Fascinated with that story.
I will be right back. I've got a copy right on my desk.
Okay. Wow, that's interesting. So heartbreak led to a total new identity. I can relate to that, I think. Back in the day, I've seen how I've changed after when I didn't get what I wanted. So it was all for the better.
All right. So this is... They did a beautiful job at the cover, too.
It's beautiful, of course. That's when he's coming out.
Yeah, this is Sacred Day, Sacred Songs. Let me find that one. It's called "Oh Love That Will Not Let Me Go."
So she broke up with him when he became blind.
Yeah, and then he turned his life to the priesthood.
Wow.
And did a lot of good.
There's that great quote by, I don't know if it's in the Bible, but I've heard the quote. It's, "God does not call the qualified, he qualifies the called."
Oh, yes.
So good, man.
Seriously. Okay, so this is the song, "O Love That Will Not Let Me Go." It starts, "O love that will not let me go, I rest my weary soul in thee. I give thee back the life I owe, that in thine ocean's depths its flow may richer, fuller be. O joy that seekest me through pain, I cannot close my heart to thee. I trace the rainbow through the rain, and feel the promise is not vain, that morn shall tearless be. O cross that liftest up my head, I dare not ask to fly from thee. I lay in dust life's glory dead, and from the ground there blossoms red life that shall endless be." It's a beautiful hymn. And what's kind of fun too is a lot of the, there's the QR codes on each page that let you listen to it.
To go to YouTube?
Goes to a YouTube video.
Oh man, that's brilliant, dude.
And I'm actually in a lot of the YouTube video. Like it's a lot of them are from the choir that I sing in. And so you can play the extra bonus game of spot the author in the choir.
Well, you know what? Whenever I first emailed you, it was in reference to a different book, and then you said you had this one, and then I looked you up on YouTube and I was impressed by your singing. So yeah, I saw a few of the videos already. Yeah. And where do you come across these songs? Because I was raised Catholic, and whenever I started dating a girl who maybe coaxed me into going to a non-denominational mass, and I just fell in love with it. Right, felt like I was connected to God for the very first time, really connected. And
awesome.
So I've been going to a non-denominational ever since, and so I hear pretty much the same songs. It seems like every week, but. Where do you hear these songs from? Is it basically you're a part of this choir and you just research new music? Is that it?
So a lot of them are from my experience with choir. We have two different directors, and one of them, his name is Ryan Murphy, is really, really good about bringing in songs from various faith traditions, a lot of different Protestant denominations. So particular one is a more Protestant hymn. So it's not one that I saw in my hymn book at church. A lot of these aren't, but he introduced it to me, and I was just like, oh, I got to use that one. It's incredible. And it is the arrangement. Then he arranged it, and we sing it in choir, and it's incredible. So I just had so many good experiences actually singing these songs myself that I knew that they have this strong, you know, like spiritual impact on people who hear them.
I'm looking at the list right now, and obviously one of my favorites of all time. I used to think that whenever I die, I want bagpipes of Amazing Grace.
So yes.
Tell me about Amazing Grace. Do you have any cool stories about this song?
Oh, well, they made whole movies about this guy, John Newton, where he was actually in the slave trade. Yeah, that was him his whole life. He was he traded in slaves. And then he had this harrowing experience where he was shipwrecked, and he was actually made a slave himself and was in captivity, and then decided to turn his life back around, obviously. He came back to England and spoke out and became an abolitionist, and was instrumental in getting slavery actually abolished in the United Kingdom. So he complete 180, you know, he went from the vile profession, you know, just trafficking in humans, to being instrumental in getting that taken away and turning to God, and of course creating this song that is just classic to
went through this. He was a slave owner, became a slave after a shipwreck, goes in, now frees slaves, and then what? Writes the song?
Yeah, and then turns his life, he becomes a religious man and writes this song. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's one of the greatest songs of all time. I know that.
It is, yeah. And there's like a Broadway musical about it. I didn't ever get to see it, but I called Amazing Grace. But like, yeah, his story is really cool. And, you know, there's a reason that he said that he was a wretch, you know, that saved a wretch like me. Like, he really was like a bad dude.
So
in the beginning of his life.
So he joins the church. How does it get picked up? But maybe I don't understand how this kind of like, and what year was this? And how does it scale from maybe him in his diocese? I don't know if it was a diocese back
then. Yeah, let me refer to it. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but a lot of these things just kind of get picked up by word of mouth. You know, this is in the 1800s. It's more of a time where people traveling from congregation to congregation, sometimes traveling preachers, are pretty popular in this period. And so they'll hold revival meetings, they'll hold services for different people in different areas. And some of these songs that they pick up, they take with them. So I believe it's a bit of the case for a lot of these songs that were spread during the 1800s. Because, you know, of course, they weren't hearing them on YouTube or whatnot.
Jeez, man, is that cool to hear. And I'm going to look into that because that's fascinating. I'm going to share that
John Newton.
My Instagram for sure today.
He's incredible.
So is there one song that stands out of like a really cool story? I mean, that one's really cool, but is there any other one?
It's kind of hard to beat that one.
Yeah, honestly. I know. I was going to say, I mean, that's, it's pretty wild how people are used basically to create a message that changes the world, right? That's the way you got to look at it.
Oh, absolutely.
You're a conduit for a message. And so the journey creates the message that needs to be shared. It's a great quote out there. Your mess becomes your message, very much like him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the power of being an author or being a composer or a lyricist, is that, yeah, you can take that mess. You can take all of the trials of your life and the rough edges and the things that you take that pain that you've experienced and turn it into something beautiful. I mean, what better thing is there than that? Taking something that could have been so bad and could have just destroyed you and turning it into something that is so hope-filled and inspirational to millions. I mean, that's just incredible.
Well, I made a post the other day, and it was in regards to how when you go through something and you come out on the other side and you document it, whether it's in a book or a song, it becomes a survival guide for someone else. How cool is that even, right?
It's incredible.
Yeah. So give us another story, because I'm looking at this and I will tell you, man, I've been going to church my whole life. I cannot tell you what some of these songs are, but The King of Love, My Shepherd Is, I think I've heard that one, or The Solid Rock, I'm pretty sure.
That's a pretty popular one. One that's really interesting and that's actually been enjoyed some renewed popularity in recent years is Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm looking at it right now, but I guess that's day three of Holy Tuesday.
So this is an interesting one too, where it was written by a man named Robert Robinson, who came in this sort of unfortunate circle where he started out as somebody who was just, you know, live for today, you only live once, eat, drink, and be merry, and then comes full circle, and then finds religion, becomes a minister and a hymn writer, but then on the other side becomes disillusioned again. And there's the story that somebody approached him later in life and, you know, thanked him for writing Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. And he kind of looked at him and just said, oh, you know, I wish that I could feel the way I did again when I wrote those words. And it's kind of ironic too, because the song, there's a line in it that says, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Here's my heart, oh, take and seal it. Like the idea is like we're prone to wander, we're prone to leave God. And so it's a prayer for him to hold us fast, and so that we don't wander. And actually, it's ironic to me that that's exactly what happened to the song's writer, is that he lost his faith again and did wander.
So he wrote a song or wrote something down about how he wished he had stronger faith. And I love that phrase. And can you just repeat that?
So I could feel
the way I felt when I wrote that before, or something like that.
So I wish that I could feel again at how I did when I wrote that song.
Man. Oh, that's good. He's like a poet. So
yeah. I mean, really, it's a wonderful song, and wondering that the arrangement is pretty stellar. It's becoming more, it's an older song, but it's getting, it's seen quite a resurgence in the past, you know, decade or so. In popularity, though, I'm happy to share with you.
I was hoping to see how great thou art, you know, the Elvis Presley one, but that's do you have any stories about that? It's one of my favorites.
Oh, you know, I had to whittle it down. There were a lot of really great hymns, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hymns. I had to whittle it down.
Have you ever heard of Waymaker? Have you ever heard of that song?
I've heard of it. I don't know that I.
It's a non-denominational popular church mass. You don't call it mass or church. It's basically service, right?
Service here, yeah.
So it's a great song, and I play that every once in a while. But you're right. Some of these old classics are unbeatable. When I go to church, it's like it brings me back. And you know, my mom passed away in May of this past year. And I had to go pick out the songs. And I'm telling you, man, I've been going to church for a long time. I had to pick out the songs that they give you a list. And I had to go through all the lyrics of the songs, because I'm like, which one really makes sense for my mom? And it was for the very first time I really paid attention to the words. And I was like, oh, is this a beautiful song? How could I never know this growing up? Right. So that's sort of did I lose you? Sorry about that. That's all right.
Dropped off for me, but I'm back. Okay.
Where did I lose you there?
You said that was it your mother passed away? Yeah.
Yep. So my mother passed away in May of this past year, and I had to pick out the songs for her mass. And I will tell you, I've been going to church my whole life, and I never reviewed, like, I never really paid attention to the words. And while I'm going through it, I'm like, oh my God, this one would be perfect for her. You there? Wait, you there? Okay, you're back. And yeah, I'm like, this would be perfect for her. I'm like, holy smokes, I've been listening to this song, just kind of regurgitating, not really thinking it through. And the words are beautiful. They're such a great message. And if it hit me right then and there. So there's probably many songs I've sang that had an amazing message and I just didn't even realize it. So you have the benefit of, number one, analyzing all the songs and then communicating, number one, the meaning of them and the story behind them. So I commend you. I've never heard of anybody doing that. We've interviewed 160 some authors so far. You're the first one that has done it. And so I like that. But How Great Thou Art is a very popular, obviously, Elvis song. I don't even know if it's a very Christian one from the get-go or if it's just made.
It is. Like, it's that one I know is actually from Sweden. It was written by, as I understand, it was a fellow who was, it was a preacher, but he or a priest or something, some sort of religious, but he was caught in a thunderstorm and had to take refuge. And as he watched it, he was kind of in awe of the power of nature and of God. And so he wrote that, was inspired to write How Great Thou Art after having this experience of being trapped in watching a thunderstorm.
Hey, is there a common theme that you've noticed amongst these songs? Like, there's tragedy always associated, and usually it's the overcoming of the tragedy that leads to the song. Is there anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. That's so often where this beauty is born of the pain or the overcoming of the obstacle. That's so common in hymns. But like, what a great thing to turn something horrible into something beautiful. You know, like, what better work is there?
So my next book is coming out. It's not going to be for a while because it takes a little bit of time to put the systems behind it to put out there. But it's called Resurrect the Hero Within. And obviously Sunday, Easter Sunday, is going to be coming up here pretty soon. We're not too far off from it. So you have two hymns here, maybe one more, but In the Garden and Christ the Lord is Risen Today. So I don't recall Christ the Lord is Risen Today song. So give us some stories behind these two, because these are very significant for the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, In the Garden, that's actually one that I've been asked to sing at funerals pretty often. So it, the song itself imagines putting yourself in the shoes of being in the garden that's around the garden tomb when Jesus was resurrected, and that he would come out and spend the day with you, just the two, just the two of you. Wow. It's beautiful. And
can you read it?
Interesting.
Could you read some of the lyrics?
Absolutely.
I hate to put you on the spot, if that's okay. I never get to do this.
No, not at all. Hey, do you want me to sing a verse of it?
Yeah. Could you?
Awesome. Yeah.
Wait, what is your, I'm going to have you sing this one, but then I'll have you sing your favorite. Okay. But yes, let's do that.
Yeah, no worries. So it's, I come to the garden alone while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses. And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known.
That's awesome, man. No warm up or anything required. I dig it.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful hymn. And it's one, it's a little bit more of an old fashioned one, where it's the kind of my grandmother's generation really, really loves this hymn. I've, like I said, sung it at a few funerals. But
what's funny about this one is that in my research, it talks about how this guy who wrote it was an avid photographer and had a dark room, and he would go down and read the Bible while he was waiting for his photos to develop. And so he was reading one night in John 20 about Mary Magdalene who came to the garden tomb, and he wrote this hymn while he's just sitting in this dark basement waiting for his photos to develop. And so like it couldn't have been further from the actual beautiful garden scene that he was describing, but like he was transported while reading the Bible to this beautiful scene and imagined himself in the garden with Jesus instead. So yeah, just one of my very favorite songs.
Jeez, it's great. Photographer sitting in a room by himself. Ever thought
reading the Bible?
Yep. Christ the Lord before. Yeah. Christ the Lord is risen. If you want to sing it or read it, it's up to you. What's this one?
Oh, sure. So this one is a little bit of an older one. It's written by Charles Wesley, who was it was written for the inaugural service of the first Methodist chapel. So the very first time there was a Methodist chapel. So he was one of these kind of Protestant reformer types, and has written quite a few hymns that you probably recognize. But so this one is just one that is very popular among Christians all over the world today to sing on Easter Sunday. And it just goes, Christ the Lord is risen today. Alleluia. Sons of men and angels say, Alleluia. Raise your joys and triumphs high. Alleluia. Sing ye hymns and earth reply. Alleluia.
I know that one well. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one, right?
Yeah. Charles Wesley wrote that one. I dig it. They always, it seems like they always end it with that one, I think, at Mass.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the big, like, finale song, right?
Yeah. For sure.
Totally. So yeah, that's a pretty well known. In this book, I tried to kind of mix the well known with a few that you might not know as well. So I always think that's a good thing. Like a few things you recognize, be like, oh yeah, that, and then like a few maybe new friends that you meet along the way.
Ooh, that's that is definitely a classic. When I think of, yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense with Easter. That definitely is one that stands out. Joy to the World is definitely a Christmas one.
Yeah. And
there's another song, I don't know if on Eagle's Wings. I don't know if you know that one.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another one I used to sing as a kid. I used to love that one.
That's awesome.
Okay. So favorite song, which one's yours?
Oh, so hard.
On this list, obviously.
Yeah. On this list. You know what? I love that there's a couple of different texts that go along with this, but it's known as "O Sacred Head Now Wounded."
And on day comes, 6, Good Friday, I guess, right? That's sacrifice. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So it is, it comes from a very, like the original one comes from a very old Latin text, but it kind of, it was then translated into German, which is a language I speak.
Wow.
The version that I know. And then it was adapted by Bach. And then finally, in the 1830, a Presbyterian minister translated into English. And so now we have, it's gone through from Latin to German to English, but I just love the tune. It's so like, so contemplative. It kind of gets that, strikes that balance of, you know, of Good Friday, where it's like, it's, you know, the there's that element of suffering still in it. Like that's the Savior still, on the cross. But also the feeling that also it's a hopeful thing. Like, you know, he's not suffering for nothing. You know, he's suffering for a good cause. So I love this one. You might have heard this one too. This one's pretty common around Easter. That, oh, sacred head now wounded.
finds it, with grief and shame weighed down, now scornfully surrounded, with thorns thine only crown, how pale thou art with anguish, with sore abuse and scorn. How does that visage languish, which once was bright as morn?
This has that kind of beautiful haunting melody to it.
Wow. Yeah. It's great for Friday, right? It's great for Good Friday because it's not
exactly
joyous just yet.
Exactly.
Oh,
you know, I think you need to, that's the thing about Holy Week. You need to go through all the emotions, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster, right? From the, you know, Palm Sunday is very joyous and, you know, welcome the King. And then, you know, we get to Thursday, Friday and Saturday. It's looking pretty, yeah, there's some pretty dark moments there. But then, of course, the comes around to Sunday again. Then things are once again.
Well, it made me think of a client we worked with this past year. He wrote a book, and it was about the phone call he had with his dad. Now I'll give you a quick little background on it. He was in the military. He was thinking about killing himself. He called his dad up, and his dad didn't know what to say. Sat there in silence, and he said, Friday is always the worst day, but don't forget Sunday is on its way.
Sunday will come. Yeah.
Always. I mean, there's obviously the biblical message there, but like it saved his life. That one phrase, like him talking to his dad, that he kept thinking, wow, he's right. You know, Friday was a dark day, but Sunday's coming and it's going to be better than ever. Right. So that phrase, and that's what it made me think of while you were singing that. So.
No, oh, that's so true. I love that. I've heard that phrase before and I've thought of it often in my own life too.
Yeah. What is the official phrase? Cause he said it in the book, but is it Friday is dark. Friday is painful, but Sunday is coming or something like that.
Yeah. I've heard different people say it in different ways, but yeah, that same idea where, yeah.
Wow. So
Sunday's coming.
So you have written a few other books.
Yes.
And a lot of people who listen to this podcast or see our content are thinking about writing a book. And I believe it's one of the greatest personal transformation, strategies ever. The more you write, the more clear-minded, the more self-awareness you have. And therefore, you basically make better decisions in the future. So what has writing done for you and why have you fallen in love with it, you think?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a great topic. I could talk about that all day. I love that writing, for one, helps you practice the vital skill of organizing your thoughts and being intentional. That it causes you to also just develop really good habits. I think that one of the biggest things that writing's helped me with is just becoming consistent. That there's a lot of developing little consistent habits that I can do on a day-to-day basis. For me, you know, for actual writing, it's, you know, hey, trying to write a little bit every day, or trying to, you know, plan, or you know, to do something revised, whatever it is that your current writing goals are. But that has a lot of crossover into other things you do in life. You're just finding those hard-hitting habits that you can do consistently on a day-to-day basis, then those little efforts add up to really, really big efforts. Mm. I wrote my, the first book I ever published, I wrote it when I was going to school full-time and working full-time. Like I had on paper, no time, but I just consistently wrote a little bit every day. Yeah. It was nice. It was a little bit of a release from all the stressful things that are going on. But I did that consistently over about the period of a year, and I ended up with a manuscript. Like it's these consistent efforts, you know, find something that you however big that is for you, whatever you can sustain consistently is where you need to set that goal. And then if you do that and you're, you know, you have a little grace with yourself, you know, there are some days that are just going to be a total wash. You can't just be like, oh, no, I've, you know, I've, that's it. I quit, you know, I'm the worst author ever, but you know, within the framework of giving yourself a little grace and a little wiggle room, you know, committing to something and having a bigger vision, I guess, down the road. You know, manuscripts don't just pop up. It takes concerted effort over a long time. But I think that's such a good life lesson to learn, because most of the things that are, you know, most worth it in life are that way. You know, like, they're not going to pop up overnight. And you have to develop those little habits that are going to get you to that ultimate destination. And it's so wonderful once you actually get there. It's so satisfying to actually, you know, hold the completed manuscript in your hand. Like today, yesterday was the launch day, and I went to a bookstore, and there it was on the shelf. They had a beautiful poster and a beautiful display of my books. And it was, yeah, there is just nothing like that feeling, you know, to see the fruits of your labors. So yeah, I encourage anyone who feels like they've got a book in them, do it. You know, start making those little goals that are going to enrich your life by the discipline and the consistency that is going to breed in you by writing a book.
And you nailed it. When you walk into a bookstore or look online or it arrives in the mail, at one time it was an idea, right? It was just a dream. And now here it is, real. So there's a great quote out there. It says, dream the painting, then paint the dream. And so that's what you're
exactly.
And so I'm with you. It does do something internally, right? You get confidence. You have to increase your consistency. There's a feeling of accomplishment, right? All of a sudden you have something that at one time didn't exist. So you're like, wow, you know what? If I could hold these little promises and keep them for a long time, maybe I can keep big promises to myself. And so you accomplish more. And then the other aspect of it, I guess, is hearing from other people. Like right now, your book just went live yesterday. You have 3 reviews, but hearing from other people that they love a story, or they took something that you shared and applied it to the life and made it better or felt better, right? It's like you have more meaning associated, because what you go through actually adds value to those around you. And there's no price you can put on that.
No, I agree with that. I've had some advanced copies, and I've been giving them out to a few people to read it, and it's exactly right. They come back to me and are like, that, you know, that book really enriched my life. You know, I've made a new Easter tradition. You know, I want to do this with my family. You know, just stuff like that. We're just like, yeah, you can't manufacture moments like that, and you can't place a price on something like that. It really is just incredible.
And you're able to get on a podcast and share the stories live with us. So we appreciate
yep.
that.
Love that.
My last question for you is your faith. Was there a moment that you weren't as strong in your faith? Because I'm thinking back on my days, and I remember being tested, but I also really struggled for a long time. And then I said, you know what? I tried doing it on my own. Let me ask God for help. And I knelt down in front of a cross that I got from Rome when I was over there when Pope John Paul II died. And I prayed to that cross for a sign to stay. Should I stay on this path or not? And I did get a sign that night from a random phone call saying, hey, I'm ready to do a book. The money that person paid me that night allowed the business to stay on, the lights on, the gas, the water on. It was the sign that I needed. So my faith became stronger from that day forward. Is there anything like that for you?
Gosh, I've had so many little experiences in my life. And faith's interesting. You go through seasons, I think, where sometimes it's a little easier to be kind of gung-ho about it, and other times when it's, you have to dig a little bit deeper. And, you know, and I think that's okay. You know, it's a little bit like the weather. It's gonna come and go, but as long as you can't keep that consistent, you know, kind of base level there. A couple of years ago, I had an experience that has, I think, cemented my faith. I feel like I already had strong faith before, but had this incredible experience of my wife was pregnant with our third child. We were going to have a baby girl. I was so excited. We had 2 boys. You know, I've always wanted to have a little baby girl. And she was due to come in September of that year. But on May 1st, my wife's water broke. And she was way, 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 way premature. And the doctors were very, very, very doom and gloom about it. You know, they were saying, you know, like, this almost never works out, you know, like, you know, don't get your hopes up. This is, you know, she's probably not going to make it. But that was, of course, a very dark time. But I turned to my faith. I turned to God and I pleaded with him that just to spare my little girl's life. And I was so excited to meet her. And I, you know, wanted to give her such a good life. And miracle of miracles, my wife had to stay in the hospital on bed rest for 76 days. And miracle of miracles, she didn't go into labor. The doctor says like 95%+ of people in that situation, they would have gone into labor and delivered a baby that would probably not survive. But she stayed in there all the way through mid-July and was born, you know, had to have some time in the intensive care unit. But just miracle after miracle, she got stronger and she survived. And now she's 2.5. And
holy smokes, a miracle baby.
She is a miracle baby on multiple counts. And so I now have this constant reminder in my life of God's goodness. Every time I see her, like, I can't forget God's goodness. I know that, you know, she was preserved through our for a purpose. And I feel really grateful now that I have that constant reminder in my life. Every time I see her, it's just, I feel that reaffirmation of like, yeah, you know, God's there. He loves you. And he provided this incredible miracle for you. Like when everybody was saying she wasn't going to make it, she is, not only is she alive, but she's healthy and happy and with no long-term effects from all the trauma she went through in the first little bit of her life, and is, this little ray of sunshine in my life personally.
Wow, man, that's amazing. And so when things like that happen, I'll tell you right now, recently, I mean, I just kind of evaluated my life and I realized God has given me everything I've ever asked for. And so I think it's in my duty to live in a certain way that kind of shows other people that God does exist, right? So like, be the example, right? You know, and maybe help other people get to where they want to get to, but also have a little bit more courage about speaking about my faith in front of anybody, anywhere. So I think that's,
I love it.
Being the light in the darkness, if you will. You see so much darkness in the world right now that, all right, well, somebody's got to step up. I feel more of a duty to start preaching about my faith. Do you share the same sentiment? Did that experience change your life or your viewpoints, or maybe, you know, you felt like, well, God is absolutely real, and now it's time for me to be the light in more dark areas, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. And I often think of that, you know, if God be with us, who can be against us? And that has given me so much courage and so much just a even stronger foundation where, you know, a lot of course there's been bad things that happened in my life since, but I feel like I've had a much stronger anchor to be like, oh, you know what? I am going to weather this. Like I know that I will, and I know where to turn, when those things happen. And I've been able also to, as you say, to reach out to other people and kind of, and help share that light and help share that experience of my own, to help bolster the faith of others. And yeah, I've been given a lot of experiences. I mentioned earlier, I just got back from a trip to the Philippines where we were with the Tabernacle Choir, where we were sharing messages of hope and messages of Jesus Christ in, you know, the other side of the world. But I've been really blessed that I've had these great opportunities where I can, they've given me the chance to stand up and be a light and to share the gospel through music and through my words. And I want to take every every chance that I get. I promise God that if I, he gives me these opportunities, I'm just going to say yes. And as I've said yes, that he's increased my abilities and in multiplied the number of the opportunities that I've had. So yeah, it's exciting. It's an exciting, you know, there's a lot of darkness out there, but there's also, yeah, that means there's a lot of work to be done.
Yep, man, it's great stuff. And yeah, you know, you're going to have me singing church songs in the shower probably all for the rest of the week, just so you know. But
mission accomplished. I really
appreciate you coming on, sharing that. I'm going to look into the Amazing Grace story because I find that extremely fascinating. Love that you're a testament for the good word, because I'm telling you, I think faith is starting to slowly disappear from the world, and maybe it's coming back. But oh my God, people are not going to church. They are starting to say they're more of an atheist out there. It's just kind of crazy. From what maybe whenever you wake up and you start to look around, you start to notice things that you don't want to notice. And that's what I'm noticing.
Yeah. But I just tell you, there's no happier way to live. I've had times when I've been more, you know, faithful or less in my life. And I just realized the times that I'm the most faithful are the times that I am the happiest, bar none. And I just want to share that with people. I want to share the goodness that I've experienced in my own life with others, because there really is just no better way to live.
Absolutely. 100%. Guys, the book is called Sacred Days, Sacred Songs, a Holy Week devotional. Absolutely perfect for this time of year. You could pick it up. It is a hardcover. It's Kindle audiobook, hardcover, and audio CD. How did you do this? How is that possible? That's really cool.
I've got a really great publisher. They've done amazing work on the book is beautiful inside and out. They've done great audio work, you know, great publicity. I mean, they just knocked it out of the park.
Wow, nice job. So guys, look him up. He also has some other books, Michael D. Young, if you want to just search the author name. And Michael, I'm glad you're able to come on the day after your best-selling book, Push. And it's an honor to have you and talk to you about God and Jesus. I don't get to do this every day, so it means a lot, man. So thank you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much.
Remember, guys, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.